Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
How's it going, everybody? It's time for the Famous Dead People podcast. That's right, the Famous Dead People podcast, the only podcast that resurrects famous people from the grave and asks them all the hard questions. I'm your host, Jarrett Berenstein, and today on the show we have German fashion designer and clothing manufacturer Hugo Boss and American comic book writer and co-creator of the character Batman, Bob Kane. It was a fascinating talk. Before we get to the episode, a couple of quick announcements. Don't forget that you can always check out the freshest episodes every Monday at 3 p.m. on Radio Free Brooklyn. You can email us at famousdeadpeople@radiofreebrooklyn.org with any questions, comments, concerns, or if you have requests for famous people you want to have on the show. Buy my book, The Kellyanne Conway Technique. It is out now, and it is hilarious. Rate and review the podcast, subscribe, tell your friends, leave a comment. Go to my website, jarrettberenstein.com, for all the latest updates on upcoming shows and whatnot. And mark your calendars, save the date, March 24th at 9 p.m. I'm going to be doing my annual birthday show at the Magnet Theater. This one's called The Sporty 40. That's March 24th, Sunday, March 24th at 9 p.m. at the Magnet Theater. But for now, sit back, relax, and enjoy Bob Kane and Hugo Boss only on Famous Dead People.
Famous Dead People. It's time.
Famous Dead People.
Time to start the show.
Famous Dead People.
Famous Dead People.
Famous Dead
People, you know.
Famous Dead People.
Famous Dead People.
Famous
stories stuck in their heads.
Famous
gonna hear rock from me, even though all these people are dead.
My guests today on Famous Dead People are 20th century American comic book writer and artist, co-creator of the DC comic book character Batman, Bob Kane.
I made Batman!
You sure did. And 19th century German fashion designer and businessman, founder of the clothing company Hugo Boss, Mr. Hugo Boss.
Oh boy, here we go. Hi.
Mr. Boss, Mr. Kane, thank you so much for joining us here on Famous Dead People.
Yes, yes, I'm happy to be here. It is my pleasure.
I have not felt happiness in a long time, but this is the closest approximation I can feel.
Well, let's get into that in just a moment. I want to start off with Bob Kane, if I may.
Ooh, me!
So, you are obviously most well known for the character Batman.
Secret Squirrel! Sorry, Batman.
I'm sorry, Secret Squirrel?
Secret Squirrel!
Was Secret Squirrel a character that you created, Bob Kane?
I made him.
I believe you. I believe you.
Who is Secret Squirrel?
Oh, where do we get started on Secret Squirrel?
He was a squirrel who was a spy.
Okay.
He's the best idea. Other than the Batman that I ever created, he was a squirrel who ran around having adventures fighting the Russians.
Wonderful, wonderful purple hat and lovely long trench coat.
Yes,
a little bit like Rocky and Bullwinkle, right? Like, because they were always fighting Boris and Natasha, who were the Russian agents.
I don't know who they are. They must have ripped me off, Bob Kane.
That sounds about right.
A fountain of ideas.
Okay. So, besides Secret Squirrel, obviously, your most famous character is Batman.
The Batman.
Batman.
The Grim Avenger.
He has become immensely popular character.
Yes.
Feverishly
the
devoted.
The most popular character ever created by anyone singularly.
You know, I'm not going to deny that. Batman, he's got a great fan base.
And Prince sings about him.
Mm-hmm. So Prince does sing about Batman.
He sings a song about Batman.
And it involves a dance.
It does. Yes,
it's
there's a
song
dance.
And a dance.
Bat dance.
So that's how you know.
I have a lot of questions. But what I found most interesting about Batman was how it changed from your original conception to what it is today. So
you're a liar. I thought of him. He sprung out of my head like Athena coming out of Zeus's head.
Well, very much. I will agree with Jarrett. I mean, at the very beginning, he was a murderer.
Yes.
Well, hold on. Let's not put the cart before the horse here. So let's just talk about the original conception. All right. According to the Wikipedia, your original design was much more flamboyant, bright, flashy colors. Red tights.
Domino mask.
Generally more Superman-like than what we know today to be Batman.
Yes, Batman, the Grim Avenger, and his red tights, and his domino mask, and his unflexible bat-winged cape.
Yes.
He would swoop down off of a rope and say to the criminals, criminals, I'm the Batman. And they would be filled with fright and blinded by his red tights.
Okay, so this is the design. But even if you go back to the very first Batman comic book, it doesn't look like that. So obviously some changes had to be made.
Changes that I thought of myself.
Of course.
Give him gloves.
If you insist.
Yes.
So you just self-edited yourself. You just looked at your own design.
I self-collaborated.
I see. Okay.
I went inside myself and spoke to myself and said, what would make this character really pop? Mm-hmm. And then I gave my ideas to my compatriots working in my sweatshop. I mean, my studio.
Okay.
And then they did the work for me.
Mm-hmm. But essentially you doing the work for yourself because you hired these people.
Hired them.
Yeah. Listen, man, I understand hierarchies and this type of thing. Like, I get you.
Yeah, I mean, if there was anybody in the world that I could put next to you, Bob Kane, who would be sympathetic to this, it would be Hugo Boss. But we will get there in just a moment.
I'm loving learning about Hugo Boss and how we're similar.
So,
because you know so much about me, correct?
Sure.
We will all learn a lot about Hugo Boss.
I kind of want to know what Bob Kane knows about me right off the bat, just before we go into
you
more.
You make the clothes.
Mm-hmm. Is that everything?
You are a clothes man.
I agree that that is the most important thing about my personality. I think we can all agree. I think that's pretty much number one with a bullet.
You make suits that I've worn to film premieres for my famous character, the Batman.
Oh my God! First of all, thank you.
Yes,
I had no idea that you were decked out in a Hugo Boss suit for the premiere of Batman and
all of the
Batman
Hugo Boss
movies.
Suits.
All right,
me
so,
all the time.
I am feeling buttered up, and pass me that Kaizo roll.
Here is the thing. All right, so whether or not what you do, Hugo Boss, making clothes is the most important fact about you,
this is what we should talk about the most.
I think it's the most interesting thing. There's way more interesting stuff about you, Hugo Boss.
Boy.
But we will get to that. So I wanted to talk about, because we talked a little bit about how the design of Batman changed.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to know if you had already made any decisions about what Batman's powers would be or what his origin story would be that you then, developed or had changed throughout. Because like red tights, you didn't have red tights, you know? We don't get the origin story at all in the first comic.
My initial idea for Batman was that he was a man who fell into a vat of bats and then developed the powers of a bat.
Okay, so
yes,
let's talk about these powers then. All right, what can this guy do?
The vision, the ability to see in the nighttime.
Does he? Because bats can do their echolocation. Does Batman do echolocation also?
Yes, he cries out into the night, "My parents are dead," and then he uses the echolocation to find his arch nemesis, the Joker.
Okay,
which is very smart because if it is dark and you start screaming, "My parents are dead," people will most likely, if they hear you, come to you.
Yeah,
like, yeah.
This is true.
Even if they're your arch nemesis, the Joker.
The Joker comes. The Joker says, did I hear correctly? Your parents are dead. It must be my nemesis, Batman.
Okay, hold on a second.
And then they have a tete-a-tete.
So that's the thing. A tete-a-tete?
Yes.
A conversation?
A tete-a-tete means a heated conversation.
Is tete-a-tete other onomatopoeias you like to draw?
Biff bam pow, it's me, Bob Kane. Yes, that's
tete-a-tete.
People were having conversations, you just write tete-a-tete in big letters.
Tete-a-tete! Exclamation point. Yes.
So you had, before the first strip had ever been drawn, you had already decided about what Batman's origin story would be, that his parents were dead. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Wonderful. And is it the exact same thing that we know today of going to the theaters or movie, they leave the movie or
certainly not.
Ooh, okay, so how did they die?
I did some self-editing.
Okay, so what was the first version?
Originally, his parents died because they had too much cholesterol in their diets.
Another tragedy.
An unhealthy diet originally.
Unhealthy diet, and they died young. Too many eggs.
Gotcha. The Wayne family.
The Wayne family.
Fabulously wealthy in the original version, or was Bruce Wayne a different kind of character before he developed into what he is today?
In the original version, they were living on Skid Row.
Oh, okay.
But then the parents died, and then it turned out...
Of cholesterol.
Of cholesterol poisoning.
But that's a good twist, because if they live on Skid Row,
where you would think it would be like ruffians or crime, but
you would think
die of cholesterol.
But it was a medical cause, and it took a long time for the two of them to die in the hospital. Biff, bam, pow.
Wow. And,
but then Bruce Wayne discovers that his father, Wayne Wayne, was
his father Wayne.
Yes, his father Wayne Wayne was
not
hiding.
not even Wayne Vane, just Wayne Vane.
Wayne Wayne, yes. That Wayne Wayne was hiding a fortune from him that the family had made in the diamond trade.
Interesting. That's so interesting, because why wouldn't they use that money? There's a lot to unpack there. And I like how it's not just a mystery.
They felt residual guilt from the way that they made that money.
So they just buried the money. Okay.
Yes.
Let's move over to Hugo Boss for just a moment. We're getting a lot of great Batman information here.
Yeah, but I'm learning a lot because I knew a lot about Batman and all of this brand new
all
info.
All of this is new information.
Fanboys beware. Bob Kane is on the air to dispel some myths.
All right, so let's go back over to Hugo Boss for a moment. So your eponymous company, Hugo Boss, is still active and extremely successful today, but...
Now,
like,
I don't know if we need to do a but. Like, it's pretty good. I started a company so back then.
Yeah, yeah.
Still going strong.
Here's the thing. Like many companies, yours had humble beginnings.
Yes.
You had a number of jobs before you settled into manufacturing clothing. You did an apprenticeship as a merchant. You were in the military for 2 years before World War One. And you worked in a weaving mill all before taking over your parents' lingerie shop in 1908.
Yeah.
So yeah. I wanted to ask you some questions about the lingerie shop. Before I ask Before I ask you about that, I'm wondering if you had all these other jobs because you were looking for a way out of the family business, or were you looking for like just to have a couple of fun years before you took over the lingerie business? Like, what was your attitude towards what's the word for something that you inherit, your heritage or
your inheritance,
my legacy,
your legacy. Exactly. What was your attitude towards your legacy?
Well, I mean, I feel like clothes have always been in my blood. Very literally. All of us Boss children are injected with at least a couple strands of string, just so they can drive the metaphor home.
I hear that if that's something that you are passionate about, you should just put it into a syringe and put it into your body, because your body is like really good at absorbing those sort of things.
Yeah.
It generally doesn't have any like negative side effects.
No.
It's like learning while you sleep.
Yes. That's why I injected comic book paper into my veins.
See, the science holds up.
And Bob Kane lived to a ripe old age, so there's no danger in that.
I don't think so.
Yeah, yeah.
But yes, clothing has always been my passion.
Mm.
So walking away from that is kind of like, are you familiar with the term Rumspringer?
Rumspringer, yes. Rumspringer, of course, is the Amish year off. That is, every Amish person takes a year off of being Amish to do whatever they like. They can party, they can use electricity, they can drive cars, whatever.
As illustrated in my classic 1945 story, Robin's Rumspringer!
I wasn't aware that Robin had a Rumspringer.
I wasn't aware Robin was Amish.
So Robin took a Batman Rumspringer? Is that what it
is? Robin took a little break from Batman. Oh. That was his Rumspringer.
May I ask which Robin this was?
This had to be Dick Grayson. This was my Robin. Right? Dick Grayson.
Right. Yes,
had to be Dick
Grayson. Aerialist extraordinaire.
Mm-hmm. So, the Rumspringer that Robin took, what were some of the things that he did when he was like...
He went bowling! He loved it.
He had a good time.
Yeah. And he ate a Reuben.
These are all things that Batman would not have allowed.
Well, Batman was a stern taskmaster.
You can't eat a Reuben if you're going to be like wearing like the skin tights with the abs and the fighting punches.
You gotta make sure you're nice and svelte.
It would have made his tuchus too big for those green panties that I put him in.
Gotcha. Which was a brilliant stroke, by the way. My favorite part.
Great. I was a master clothing designer.
Yeah, Batman, all sorts of dark tones. He could be hidden in the night. But let's put his sidekick in as bright and colorful of a costume as humanly possible.
Yes, Robin leapt around like a ball of light,
almost
bringing light to Batman's dark world.
A human distraction, if you will. Mm. It was like, look at how bright and colorful that child is.
How dare you be so cynical?
While we are doing our drug deal here on the docks.
I believe that it has become part of canon that Robin as the child is supposed to dress in bright colors mm-hmm. and then bounce around to distract and draw the fire.
That's right.
But the only reason why I designed him that way is because the only colors that could be printed for comic books back then were red and green and black.
They were the cheapest colors at the time.
They were. Because we made the red ink from the blood of urchins.
I will say that we've all learned a lot over the years, and I don't believe at this point any color is certainly better than any other color.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a really good point.
I beg to differ.
So if you're just joining us, this is Famous Dead People on Radio Free Brooklyn, and my guests today are 19th century German fashion designer and businessman Hugo Boss.
Yeah.
Whose past we will be delving into.
I don't know
if it's necessary.
And 20th century American comic book writer and artist Bob Kane.
Excelsior! Oh, no, that's not me!
Okay. So, we interrupted you, Hugo Boss. You were talking about these other jobs you were doing with sort of like your personal Rumspringa away from the lingerie store. Is that right?
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of like, you know, see what else I could experience. Mm-hmm. And so I then bring that into fashion, which is my passion. Okay. Like, honestly, fashion has been like the number one thing I've always cared about. So, mm-hmm. like, let's say, oh, I don't know, if a job opportunity comes along, like a very nice job opportunity to design a whole bunch of outfits for, oh, just oodles of people.
You're just like, I don't care who these people are. I don't care about their politics. I don't care about their philosophy.
Young and hungry, you take the jobs you can get.
You take the job. I understand.
You take
completely,
it.
Hugo Boss.
Yeah.
And that's why you did things like worked as an apprentice for a merchant, why you worked at the weaving mill, that sort of thing.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Those things.
Okay.
Those things.
I feel like you're skirting around something that you did.
We will get to it. Don't you worry.
I'm worried.
We will
so
get
much.
To it. So,
I'm very much worried.
Very quickly, I know that lingerie was a lot different back then in the early 1900s when you took over the lingerie store that your parents owned. Would you be able to describe for us just very quickly what kind of items you would sell in a lingerie shop back then? Like, were they classy? Were they sexy? Like, what did it look like to walk into a lingerie store in the early 1900s?
Let me take you on a journey.
Ooh.
Close your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Picture a German sex shop.
Oh.
You're there. Like, it's like pretty, like, it's, I'm not going to be, there's not going to be a lot of surprises. Yeah, there was some kinky shit going on.
Mm-hmm.
You
was
know?
It smelly?
I mean, no, we were hygienic.
Not what I was going for, Bob Kane. I wanted to know, like, the items that would be sold there.
Most of the sex shops I've been in have a smell of desperation.
Oh, yeah, no, we had that. But that's kind of, like, more from the customers.
So this was not, like, a classy lingerie store. This was a place where for your kinks.
It was a lovely mom and pop shop.
Okay, but you said, imagine a German sex store, and that's what I imagined.
I imagine family when I think of Germany.
I
imagine wholesome togetherness.
Okay.
And nothing else about Germany.
I imagine bratwurst.
Oh, is that? Yes, bratwurst too. And pretzels.
Munch, 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 munch.
Let's go back over to Bob Kane for just a moment.
Oh,
please do.
All right.
So, after high school, you studied art and trained as an animator. Your first job in the field was freelancing original material for a comic book called Wow What a Magazine. Is
wow,
that right?
What a Magazine!
Okay.
Such a pretentious name.
Wow What a Magazine.
Like how Prego names itself You're Welcome. Like that's a pretty setting the bar high.
Yeah, I have a lot of questions about this. So like, what was Wow What a Magazine? Was it just comics? Because that name sounds like it could be anything.
What it was mostly comics, where instead of the characters going through adventures and doing things, they'd look out at the reader and say, "You love this."
Okay.
And that's all that they would do.
Gotcha. So let's say we had like a
funny animal strips.
Funny animal strips. And
Beanie Bunny.
So like the animals. Beanie Bunny.
Chucky the Woodchuck. But instead of going on little adventures with their friends, they'd look out to the reader and say, "You love this. Buy more of this funny book."
What a great comic strip you are reading. This is so entertaining.
What a great comic strip.
It sounds so good. It's like hearkening me back to, I believe I've read a few of these can you just remind me of like 8 other characters you came up with?
Of course.
Just to jog my memory,
so
of course.
There was Beanie Bunny.
There was Chucky the Woodchuck.
Right.
No, we covered those. I am talking about 8 more.
There was Frank, who was a titmouse. His name was Frank. There was a spy who was a homo sapien.
So a person
whose name was Rover. Surprise!
Rover, the homo sapien spy.
That's right.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see a lot of homo sapiens.
There was a brother-sister team who were very cute, whose names were Dot and Woody.
Dot was the one I was trying to remember. Okay, great.
And Woody. The twist about them is that, surprise, they were fat.
did not take a lot back in the day.
Surprise!
So there was a serial comic that you drew for Wildwood magazine called Hiram Hick. Do you remember Hiram Hick?
Of course I remember Hiram Hick.
I know we already ran you through the gauntlet here, asking you to describe all these other characters, but just tell us a little bit about Hiram Hick, what the gist was. What kind of a theme? Hiram Hick.
Hiram was a good family man, but the twist was that he wanted to leave his wife and marry a sandwich.
Interesting. Okay. Mm. That sounds like you could get a lot of mileage out of that.
In every episode, he wanted to marry a different type of sandwich.
Ooh. So
his love was fickle.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but he always loved pickles. That was the tagline.
I just stumbled into that. Oh, wow.
Well, love is fickle, but he always loved pickles.
That was unintentional, believe it or not.
Let's go back to Hugo Boss for just a moment.
Oh,
so
boy.
After World War I, you just start your own clothing line. You leave the lingerie shop. And it feels like a little bit of a leap because you had only worked at lingerie at this point. And so you're gonna start to make clothing, right?
I mean, it's not that much of a leap. If you're making the clothes that go directly onto a naked body and you get those measurements correct, then it's like just do the same thing, but like up it by one.
Just a little bit.
Just like a little bit bigger.
Okay. Yeah, that
add
makes
more
sense.
Fabric.
Yeah, the hard part is doing the lingerie. Everything else after that is like playing on easy mode.
Yeah, I mean, like once you get the elastic out of there, it's like, oh, I call the shots.
Okay, cool. So you started with.
And I liked that power, Jared.
Yes.
I liked the power.
Ooh, you like the power of being in control.
Yes.
Gotcha.
That's something we had in common.
Yes.
Okay, so no collaborators for Hugo Boss either. Okay, we'll get to it. So you started with shirts and jackets. I'm assuming that these were just very simple button-down shirts and blazers, like very conservative. It's the early 1900s, so, you know.
I like to... On the outside, yes, it might have just looked like, you know, your standard brown.
Okay.
But here's one thing I like to do.
Ooh, okay.
I like to do a little inward stitching. So it would sometimes say something naughty on the inside of the
something
shirt.
Something naughty on the inside, maybe to harken back to your lingerie store days.
A little. Oh, Jared, you're picking up on my subtleties.
Okay. So, like, what were some of the things that you would stitch on the inside of your shirts and jackets to just... Just as a little homage to your humble beginnings.
Oh, just I'd maybe stitch a little something like a sweetie pie or like, you know, bad boy.
This is a lot like those candy hearts that you get for Valentine's Day.
Yeah, very similar, you know.
I love it because it's sweet and endearing.
Yeah, just like little things like, you know, like Master Race. Like all these cute little things.
Master Race.
Now, yeah, it's just, you know, a bunch of these cute little sayings like, you know, thug boy, you know.
Thug boy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Very much like Selena Kyle and her alter ego Catwoman. Man, I feel like with Hugo Boss, we're burying the lead.
Okay, so I'm going to assume, give a bit of the doubt here, and assume that Master Race was a cute thing that you would say to your sweetie back in the day, and that this is not a weird thing to put on the inside of a jacket.
I don't see how it could be interpreted as anything else. Like, you look at your sweetheart and you say, you are the master at making my heart race.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So why did you put the extra words in?
Why didn't you add those words?
I had a whole 2-word thing going, and I just wanted to keep that pattern going.
It makes sense. You know, here's the thing. This is the way that the vernacular works, Bob Kane, is that sometimes we just take out certain phrases or whatever just because it becomes easier to say. It's the reason why we have things like, you know, let go instead of let go.
Or it's, you know, we used to say Guten Tag, but now we just say Good Tag.
It's the way that I named Catwoman originally, the cat-like woman.
Exactly.
But it wouldn't fit in the word balloons for my funny books.
Things get shortened. So, Hugo Boss, due to the economic climate of Germany in the 1920s, you were forced into bankruptcy. Your original clothing manufacturers, you have to declare bankruptcy.
My greatest shame.
Yes. And so the Wikipedia isn't very descriptive about this. And I know that things were tough in Germany after losing World War One. But were there... Like, would you tell us what it was like to try to operate a business in post-World War One Germany and how it was specifically difficult for you and your clothing store and how that led to bankruptcy?
Well, I mean, yeah, this was... Nobody wants to go spend on frivolous things and looking nice and stuff that when everybody is poor and sad and also... feeling like losers, because like we way lost that one.
Yeah.
We lost that one bad.
You guys. Had a bad war.
we had one bad war. Agreed.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And anyway, we moved on as all should.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, yada yada yada. I decided to get into military uniforms just because I felt like that was more of a.
Well, here's the thing. I'm asking about the yada 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 part. I am asking about. You know, you try to open up this clothing business. It's difficult. Everyone feels like a loser. Everybody has fewer resources. The economy's a little rocky.
Yes, I agree completely with Jarrett. Mm-hmm. I am and was a victim. And and I think, you know, when you're kind of like, you know, exploring yourself and you're trying to sell and nobody is buying. So you try to make very, you know, approachable clothes. Maybe you cut back on some of the... sweeter phrases that you do little inward stitches just for you and your friends and your people.
You just want to sell maybe the most popular phrase shirts, like, for example, Master Race, I'm assuming, was very popular.
Oh, it was a big seller for you because many people had racing hearts.
It you know, that was... Yeah, I'm going to say that's what I thought at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And like it did catch on like wildfire.
Wildfire. And we will get to that in just a moment. We're going to have to take a break.
I don't think we need to.
We're going
to
take a break in just a moment. But before we do, I wanted to ask you, Bob Kane, very quickly.
It's me.
So you did work for other companies. You did a comic strip called Oscar the Gumshoe for the companies that later merged into DC Comics.
This is true. His shoes were made of gum.
Okay. Oh, so this was an actual gum shoe guy. So he was a detective, I'm assuming. Like, that's what we know of gum shoes, is that this was probably a detective comic strip.
Yes, he solved candy crimes.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I was wondering, because what I wanted to know was, you know, Batman eventually becomes a detective character.
The Dark Knight detective.
Yeah, were there things...
Oh, that one was correct.
Were there things about Oscar the Gumshoe that would later become part of Batman's character? You know, were there things that you took from there that you helped develop into the detective that Batman would eventually become?
Yes. He had a butler whose name was Peppermint.
Peppermint.
And he would scream at him. Bloody murder. He'd say, Peppermint, why isn't my bed turned down? Peppermint, where is my foie gras? And that is exactly what Bruce Wayne, the alter ego of Batman, the Dark Knight Avenger, that is what Bruce Wayne was like in his relationship with his caregiver, Alfred.
Interesting. I mean, a lot of the Batman stuff that I've seen and read, there's a much more loving relationship between him and Alfred.
After I was done writing that strip, when I wrote him, Bruce Wayne handled Alfred with a heavy hand.
Gotcha.
May I ask what made you decide to change that tone?
Because obviously you changed it. You were the one that decided to change it.
I did it, yes. I did it myself. I did it because times were changing and we were treating our butlers better. So I decided that I would have Bruce Wayne, the Batman, treat his butler, Alfred, the Englishman, better.
Okay, so back then, it was weird if you treated your butler nicely. Then the times changed, and so Batman and Bruce Wayne changed with those times.
It was socially incorrect.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's why at the end of every Batman adventure, penned by Bob Kane for the first 10 years, Batman and Robin would give each other a slap in the face.
Was that a regular thing back then, a slap in the face?
Yes, it was the way that two heterosexual men proved that they were not in love with each other.
Just a slap in the face?
Yes.
If there's ever a question...
Have a good night, Jerry. Slap.
If there was ever a question about whether or not two guys were gay... They could solve it by just slapping each other in the face when they say goodbye.
And just give like, a little whack.
Couple of
Biff
good,
bam, pow.
Couple of good regular Joes there. Unfortunately, we got to take a short break, but we'll be right back with Bob Kane and Hugo Boss on Famous Dead People. Stay with us. Hey, everybody. Just want to take a quick break to remind you to subscribe to Famous Dead People on iTunes or whatever app you are using to listen to podcasts. Rate us 5 stars, leave a comment, tell your friends. All that stuff helps us out a ton. And feel free to hit us up at famousdeadpeople@radioforbrooklyn.org if you want a specific famous dead person on the show or if you have any comments that you want to shoot over to us. Whatever, we love hearing from fans. Also, check out my book, The Kellyanne Conway Technique. It is out now. It is hilarious. I hope that you will check that out and read that and leave reviews, awesome reviews on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com or whatever, and tell your friends to read it because it's super funny and I want that money. Also, go check out jarrettberenstein.com for all the latest on my show dates and up-to-date project information. And lastly, if you really like Famous Dead People and you want to send us some money to help keep the show on the air, go to radioforbrooklyn.org/famousdeadpeople and click on the Support the Show button. Thanks again for listening, and now back to the podcast.
Welcome back to Famous Dead People on Radio Free Brooklyn. Famous Dead People, the only show that resurrects famous people from the grave and asks them all the hard questions. I'm your host, Jarrett Berenstein, and we are here every Monday at 3 p.m. on Radio Free Brooklyn. My guests in the studio today are 19th century German fashion designer and businessman, founder of the clothing company Hugo Boss, Mr. Hugo Boss.
Hey.
And 20th century American comic book writer and artist, co-creator of the DC Comics character Batman, Bob Kane.
I'm old!
So, I couldn't help but notice a sort of dire, down-in-the-mouth attitude in you, Hugo Boss, just now. And I predict it's because you know what we're going to be asking about next.
I mean, do we need to?
I think it's really interesting, and I think this would be a good opportunity for you to get on the record about what actually happened back then. So,
as I already mentioned,
you were forced into bankruptcy due to the economic climate of Germany at the time, but in 1931, you reach an agreement with your creditors, and you are left with 6 sewing machines to start again. This was coincidentally the same year that you joined the Nazi party. Now.
Uh-oh. Now joined.
Now, I saw that coming from a mile away, but hearing it out loud, it's a whole other thing. Biff, bam, pow.
Now, joined is such a, ooh.
Such a correct word? Such an accurate word for what happened?
It implies that, like, I was like, oh, what am I going to do today? Should I join a soccer league? No, I'll be a Nazi. No, like, it's hands were tied. Again, remember, like, right before the break, I'm the victim.
But you are, it was rough back then.
I can empathize with you.
The economy, am I right?
The economy was bad. I was also the victim.
Yes.
I'm sorry, how were you a victim, Bob Kane?
All of my underlings claiming that they created the Batman, or they created the Robin, or they created the cat-like woman. When it was me who thought of all these wonderful ideas to my own imagination, but here comes Jerry Robinson claiming that it was me.
Or Bill Finger saying, I'm the one who wrote the story.
Him the finger.
Ooh,
I feel like you've been sitting on that one.
Yeah, that one was in the chamber.
You're ready.
That's what I always say when I hear his name.
Okay,
I've been saying it for the last 80 years.
So we'll get to the credit issues and we'll get to Bill Finger in just a moment. But so I have to imagine, Hugo Boss, that you were only able to reach this agreement to get out of bankruptcy because you joined the Nazi party. I have to imagine that they had a lot of pull back then, and this is a way that you saw of getting your business back on track.
Look,
is that right?
I mean, here's this deal. Mm-hmm. You know, the economy is not doing well, and you're a clothing maker, and nobody is approaching you to buy clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Then this one game in town, only game in town, shows up, and they're like, well, guess what? We need a lot of clothes, preferably all very similar, and, you know, tailored a certain way. And I thought, you know what? That sounds good. Read no further. Let's do it. Let's do a handshake, a gentleman's agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know,
So now, would you say then? Because I'm gonna lob this one at you, Hugo
oh,
Boss.
Boy.
It's gonna be a real soft lob in your direction.
Okay.
So, did you actually feel inspired by the Nazi Party's philosophy? Were you on board with the Nazi Party? Were you excited about what they were doing? Were you happy to be involved? Or was this literally just a financial decision that you were making to try to save your company?
You know, Jared,
this silence speaks volumes.
Listen, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Mr. Interviewer. May I answer your question?
Okay.
Well, am I on the spot here? Should we put me on a spit roll?
It just seems
I
like
I am the victim.
You're tied to a giant pendulum of death. It
Here's
swings
the deal.
Back and forth until you answer the question.
Mm-hmm. Here's the deal.
Okay.
So, there's this guy. Let's call him Adolf.
Adolf, okay.
Let's call him Adolf Hitler.
Okay. You're referring to the holder of the Spear of Destiny, Hitler!
Yes, okay. And he never let me see it once.
How dare he?
What a mean guy.
Just very miserly.
Okay, so this guy,
ironically
Adolf
considering. Anyway.
Yes. Wow, okay.
But anyway, so I wasn't like super gung-ho about it all, but, you know, he was charismatic. You know, okay, try and put yourself in my shoes.
Okay.
The country's in turmoil.
Ugh, it's hard.
You're financially not doing great.
All
of a sudden, this very impassionate speaker comes along.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he looks a little weird. Maybe he has some sort of hair that doesn't look like normal hair. But
definitely
kinda,
with the most popular facial hair at the time.
The most popular. Okay. The most popular. The biggest words. He has all of these things. Mm-hmm. And you get kind of like sucked into this.
You get swept up in the momentum of what's going on there.
So, exactly.
Okay. I'm with you, Hugo Boss. I understand what you're trying to say. So you got swept up in the fervor of what was going on in Germany at the time. And it also coincidentally was really good for your business financially.
There were mouths to feed.
Gotcha.
And also, you know, like there were so many mouths, we maybe needed to clear out a few of the mouths. I'm just saying.
So in Germany, you had to clear out some of the mouths.
I'm just saying, lots of mouths, very little food.
Sweep away the refuse. Out with the old, in with the new. Bim, bam, bam.
You're being a little bit, you know, harsher
now,
than
before,
I would say.
Before we move on, I just wanted to ask you, were there other conditions of your bankruptcy agreement? Like, you get these 6 sewing machines. Were there other things that you had to agree to do that either had to do with the Nazi Party or didn't have to do with the Nazi Party in order to settle on a way to handle your debt and continue your business?
Agree to do was just make a bunch of the uniforms.
Okay.
And okay. Listen, Hitler, bad guy. No, you know, first one in line to say bad guy Hitler.
Okay,
you that's
boss
me.
Did not like Hitler. Bad guy.
Hitler, a real two-face.
That said, he did allow me a lot of artistic freedom to kind of like create my, you know, very symmetrical
your uniforms.
The uniforms. Mm. I like them to be crisp.
Gotcha.
I like them to be clean and sharp, and I thought that everyone walking by will respect them and will really dig this look.
This guy Hitler, he's a bad guy, but he is giving me a lot of good models for my ideas. We're walking around showcasing my designs.
Bad guy, good opportunities. Mm-hmm. Harvey Weinstein.
You know, it happens. It happens to the best of us. Now, you mentioned Hitler, Bob Kane, was a real two-face.
A two-face.
But I'm wondering if there's another villain in the DC universe that maybe is more of a Hitler character. If you want to stand by Two-Face, that's fine. But I'm just saying, since, you know, we're gonna open the floor here to see, like, are there other characters?
Yes, another one of my greatest creations. Mm-hmm. The Calendar Man!
Calendar Man. Hitler was like the Calendar Man.
The man who based his crimes on the calendar.
They both loved 420.
They loved it.
That's right.
Both of them.
Not a lot of people know that 420 was Hitler's birthday.
Okay. The closest I had to Hitler in my life was my editor, Sheldon Moldoff.
Oh, that guy was a real, he was a real Nazi, that guy.
Well, he was strict when it came to deadlines, but he said, Bob, you do whatever you please.
Oh, sort of.
And that's when I created the Batmite. The six-dimensional mite who flew around with Batman having adventures.
Now, I just want to say one thing for the listener who maybe isn't as familiar with your work.
Okay.
So Batmite and Calendar Man are not, like some people listening to this might think, oh, yes, this is a ridiculous, funny joke. No, the Batmite was real.
The Batmite was real.
As is Calendar Man, popular characters.
Yes, these are all real things.
These things from my fertile brain.
So, Bob Kane, let's talk about, we already touched on this a little bit, but in 1939, DC has this breakout success with Superman, and everybody starts scrambling to create similar superheroes. And it was in this fervor that you conceive of the Batman.
Yes.
You went the total opposite.
So, do you remember? Well, first of all, the original Batman was very similar to Superman, but, you know,
we got into
that a little bit earlier. So, do you remember any of the other characters that DC or any of the writers came up with that were also trying to compete with Superman, but that didn't maybe take off the way that Batman did?
Absolutely.
Okay, so yeah, let's talk about it. Who are these other Superman competitors that people
were... Muscle Boy!
Muscle Boy, all right.
He was a strong boy.
Okay, and I say boy, this is like a child?
Yes.
Like someone in high school?
He was nine!
He was a nine-year-old boy named Muscle Boy.
And he ran around throwing cars.
Ooh, okay.
Not very successful.
Okay, I mean, was there a reason why he was throwing the cars, or was it just...
I think that's why the strip didn't do as well as they had hoped. He was overturning cars hither and thither.
Okay.
But there was no real motivation for Muscle Boy to be doing such things.
Okay.
Yeah, I imagine it's like when you see those videos on YouTube of like the 8-year-olds that are insanely cut. Like
yes.
It's like this
That's
is disconcerting
like.
To look at.
Mm-hmm.
I don't
it
like
it. It was grotesque.
It makes me feel bad.
Yes. It was body horror.
Before we move on, were there any other Superman-esque characters that you wanted to share with us that maybe didn't take off?
Absolutely. This was a character that was very popular later on, but initially was a Superman-like character.
Mm-hmm.
Cyborg! Yes, the Teen Titans!
So Cyborg was originally part of this...
When he was created in the late 30s,
mm-hmm.
Cyborg was a plank of metal!
Just a plank of metal.
Yes, just a piece of metal!
Just an inanimate...
No, I'm sorry, not a piece of metal. A plank of metal.
A plank of metal.
Someone sculpted
a piece of metal. Yeah.
They sculpted the metal, and then the neighborhood children would throw him around.
Okay.
And he'd go on adventures, oblique slowly, depending on whether the children were available to throw him to his next location.
I see. And so
the Cyborg
this
man.
Character somehow managed to hold on long enough to be developed into what we now know today to be Cyborg.
Yes. Yes. The DC Universe's cornerstone character, the Cyborg.
He's very
currently
popular.
Currently being featured in DC Comics periodicals. Yes. Pick them up at your local newsstand.
Yes, and the Justice League movie, I believe.
League film.
And the upcoming Doom Patrol.
The Ooh. Doom Patrol
Can't wait to
series
check that one out.
On DC Universe streaming services.
So, according to the Wikipedia, you were inspired by the character Zorro for the Batman.
Yes.
And also, you were inspired by a film that I had never heard of from 1930 called The Bat Whispers.
Yes, The Bat Whispers.
Can you tell us anything about the movie The Bat Whispers from 1930?
It's a nature film.
Okay.
Where bats are whispering to each other in dulcet tones.
Ooh, okay.
There's a romantic undertone as one bat makes another bat his betrothed.
Okay.
May I be so bold as to ask you to break us off a piece?
I'm sorry, what?
I would like to hear what it sounds like when a bat whispers.
Of Ooh. Course, I'm happy to. I'll have to tone it down for the first time in my life.
Okay.
Here we go. I'm a bat. And then the female bat goes, I am also a bat. It was a big hit in the art house circuit.
Gotcha. That sounds great.
Of the 30s.
So this was a nature documentary.
Yes.
Not that unlike what we now know today to be like Planet Earth.
Certainly. You get blazed and watch the Bat Whispers in your local Cinematheque.
So what was it, besides the obvious that it was a nature film about bats, was there anything else that you took from that you were like, oh, this would be really great for my new superhero character, the Batman?
Absolutely. The film was hosted by a host named Commissioner Gordon.
Commissioner Gordon was the guy who narrated and hosted this nature film?
Yes.
Okay.
Resplendent with his pipe and mustache.
Mm-hmm. All right, yeah, that sounds really interesting.
So I put him into my funny book.
It's a real one-to-one there. For those of you who are just joining us, this is Famous Dead People on Radio Free Brooklyn, and my guests today are 20th century American comic book writer and artist Bob Kane.
It's me, the Kane Man.
And 19th century German fashion designer and businessman Hugo Boss.
It's me, the Boss Man.
Let's go back to Hugo Boss for just a moment.
Okay.
Obviously, joining the Nazi party ended up being an extremely shrewd and lucrative move for you.
Oh, you put so many words together so quickly.
Your company in the 1930s, Hugo Boss is responsible for producing all the uniforms for the SS, the Hitler Youth, and also other government services like the Postal Service, the rail employees. You eventually produced the uniforms for the, I believe they're called the Wehrstag. The entire
Wehrstag, yes.
Army of the Nazi Germany.
Of bratwursts. So you
mentioned earlier that these were your designs, but according to Wikipedia, you weren't actually designing these. You were only manufacturing them. The designs were by two men, Carl Diebitsch and Walter Heck.
Oh, man.
But I'm wondering, because you said earlier that these were your designs, like how did you have any collaborations with these two? Were they giving you designs and you're just making what you wanted?
Let me let you in on the real story, because it stopped being collaboration. Like you make a deal with Adolf Hitler, you think he's going to keep his word, and so far not so much.
Interesting. I've never heard that about Hitler, that he was unreliable.
Yeah, no, and you brought up those two chuckle clucks.
Carl Diebitsch and Walter Heck.
Yeah, I call it Diebitsch and Heck is right.
Ooh, wow.
That's good.
I'm just wondering if those phrases and vernaculars were even something that people in Germany in the 1930s would understand.
Not a lot of people got it, but that's why I'm happy to be here. Gotcha. I feel heard.
Finally, an audience for these sick burns.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yes, not like the sick burns that were going on inside where I had to be. You know, let's not even. Anyway, here's what happened.
I agreed.
Listen, I'm on your side of this fence.
Mm.
I designed the costumes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I call some costumes.
Costumes makes it seem a lot cuter than what they were doing.
It's fun. Yeah. It's supposed to be. Clothing's supposed to be fun. And then Diebitsch and Heckboy, they go ahead and they... Adolf passes off my designs to them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's things that I like aesthetically. I like neatness. I like symmetry. I like angles. I like sharpness.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, these red armbands show up on my work, throwing off the symmetry entirely. And whoa. I knew that, okay, it was time for me to take a stand.
Okay.
And so I decided, while part of the regime, to start, you know, putting little notes here and there to make them look as bad guys as possible.
Interesting. So you were giving these guys these very clean and uniform uniforms.
Yes.
They had decided to throw a red Nazi armband on them.
Ruined the whole aesthetic.
And you're like, this looks terrible. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start adding designs into this that tell everybody that they're the bad guys.
I added skulls.
Okay.
I added a lot of stuff that basically giving, you know, the benefit to history. I'll be like, in the future, they'll look back and go like, oh, yeah, blatantly, these were the bad guys.
Fascinating. So it's similar to, like, Oskar Schindler used his factory to make ammunition for the Nazis, but he famously sabotaged the ammunition to help the Allied war effort. Is that...
Very similar.
This was like a sabotage that you were doing?
Very similar. Like,
you were an inside man!
I was not okay
with the, you know, the rounding up of the people mm-hmm. and then, you know, the torture and the murder. And then that red sash happened. I was like, straw camel back done. I'm going to take a stand right here and I'm going to do my part to subvert the authority.
The red armband was the straw that broke Hugo Boss's back, and you decided then to become an agent for the Allies.
When you put it like that, I sound shallow. Listen, if the red armband had come before the Jew thing, mm-hmm. then the Jew thing would have been the thing that broke the back.
Like, it's just what came next.
It's just what came next. It's like, listen, I'm a Nazi, not an asshole.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay. Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. So you would say you, in essence, were the original designer, but then these guys kind of collaborated and ruined this thing that you loved, and that's the reason why you sort of began subverting the Nazi agenda.
Again, Jarrett, a reason, please, like, because I feel like you're hearing me, okay. But then when you say things back, right. you're only, like, not really giving it enough.
In addition to all the bad things the Nazis were doing,
thank you.
This was part of your inspiration. Okay. Let's go back over to Bob Kane for just a moment. So in preparation for this interview, I found the original Batman comic online, the very first one.
Oh,
and I read it.
The Crimes of the Chemical Syndicate.
That's right. And there is not a lot in there of what we know of Batman. There's no origin story. We don't know a lot about his character.
But Bruce Wayne is smoking a pipe.
He is smoking a pipe. What I love, one of the things I love about it is that in the first panel, it's like, he's like, here are the tales of the mysterious Batman whose identity is yet unknown. And then the next panel, it's Commissioner Gordon hanging out with his friend.
With Bruce.
Bruce Wayne. Just hanging out with his friend Bruce Wayne.
This is true. They're having a little talk.
Tete-a-tete.
A tete-a-tete.
Commissioner Gordon.
Oh, balloons.
Commissioner Gordon gets a phone call and he finds out, oh my God, there's been a murder.
Yes.
This guy's son is a suspect. We have his fingerprints on the knife.
Absolutely.
Bruce Wayne, I gotta go investigate this murder. And then he invites Bruce Wayne to come along with him to the murder investigation.
You're doing a wonderful job remembering my comic.
So I just read this yesterday.
Yeah. You said that like it sounded incredulous. Have you ever seen Ride Along? It happens.
The movie Ride Along with, was it Kevin Hart?
Is that right? You bet your butt it was Kevin Hart.
Problematic.
Okay. So how common was this back then that cops would just bring their friends along to investigate murders with them or other similar crimes?
If you were a millionaire philanthropites like Bruce Wayne,
yes,
then you would be invited everywhere.
Gotcha.
To every crime scene.
I don't know.
To
Brisses?
Yes, everywhere.
Were Brisses crime scenes back then?
They yes. should have been.
They were. The Jews had to conduct them in secret.
We really had a tripwire here for Hugo Boss.
Yes. I'm sorry.
Got some very strong feelings about circumcision.
There's just a couple of things that you don't cross the line on.
You're one of those anti-circumcision guys.
Yeah.
But who's completely fine with Jews?
Yes.
And who's fine with
Jews? You love the Jews.
Let's be clear. I'm not a blanket anybody. I like some Jews. Jarrett, you seem great.
I'm all right.
I'm Bob Kane, let it be known. I'm also a Jew.
Could not tell from your manner of speech.
I know.
And is that the reason why? I know you changed your last name, Bob Kane. It was originally Khan.
Yes.
And you changed it to Kane. Was that to hide your Judaism?
No, it was because of the Star Trek villain, Khan.
He was making life difficult for you.
I didn't want people on the street going, Khan!
That would have been annoying.
Also, you're so sweet, so you're more like cane sugar.
That's right. I'm more like sugar cane because I'm a sweetie pie.
They are. Sweetie pie. One of the things that Hugo Boss used to sew on the inside of his jacket.
Sweetie pie.
Little sweetie pie. Maybe a little doofa dork.
Gotcha. So, Commissioner Gordon brings his friend Bruce Wayne along. At the
and
end
Bruce
of the
Wayne
comic.
Says, oh, yes, I will attend this.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go. And he's like, they're both smoking pipes. And he's looking around this murder investigation.
They
oh, fascinating.
Love their pipes.
Honestly, if someone said, hey, you want to go check out this murder investigation? I'd be like, heck, yes. Let's see this new experience.
You see, that's not. My first question would be, is that cool? Like, it doesn't
if
seem like I should be allowed to
offering,
do that.
The commissioner is offering, it's cool.
I would only attend a murder investigation if it was at a chemical syndicate.
Okay, so At the end of the comic, Batman punches the bad guy into a vat of acid.
Yes, the acid devours him, eats away at his bones.
And Batman says a fitting
end for his kind.
For his kind.
Yes.
This obviously goes against the philosophy that Batman should not kill things.
Except bad guys.
Okay, but this eventually develops.
And fire eaters and sword swallowers. And, as evidenced in the film, Batman Returns. When Batman murders a fire eater by setting him on fire.
I don't remember that part of that.
Yes, he's burned alive.
First of all, delightfully ironic. And second of all, like, am I wrong? Am I the only one in the room that's like, okay with maybe killing a freak or two? Like,
I'm just fine getting, with
like,
it.
I'm not okay with
this. As long as they are killed
in a fun and ironic way.
Absolutely.
So if a sword swallower gets stabbed with a sword.
Hilarious.
Two-Face, cut in half.
Oh, so good.
The Joker laughing himself to death.
A Jew destitute. You know, it's all fun.
Okay. Wait a second.
What?
I got to pull the pin on this. So how many, just out of curiosity. So Batman, early in his career, he was killing people, but he was only killing criminals. He was only killing bad guys. Is that right?
Only criminals or bad little boys.
He would kill bad boys?
Naughty boys.
So what's the thing that a little boy would do that Batman would then come in and kill the boy?
One of my favorite early stories was one with a boy, truant from school. His name was Benny, and Batman throws him into a vat of acid and says, a fitting end for his kind. And then all the little boys and girls reading my funny books would say, ooh,
can't be late.
Can't be truant for the schooling, or else Batman will sneak into my room in the middle of the night, throw me into a vat of acid. The last thing I will hear as my ears are being singed off is, a fitting end for his kind.
I love this idea that if they avoid school, get home, fall asleep at night.
That is when Batman comes.
Will keep an eye on you. Batman will be like, he's got to just like, no, that one missed second period.
Batman only comes in the nighttime, the grim avenger of the night. If you are disciplined during the day, Robin the Boy Wonder comes and he pokes you silly.
He just gives you little pokes.
He gives you tiny pokes.
That's how Robin disciplines
you. With his gloved green hands.
Yes. Unfortunately, we are quickly running out of time here on Famous Dead People. Just have time for one more question for Hugo Boss.
Oh, boy.
So the war ends. Everybody who worked for or with the Nazis, they are being punished. They're being put on trial for their involvement.
Uh-oh.
You were initially labeled as an activist, supporter, and beneficiary of the Nazi Party. You are banned from running your business. There's a heavy fine put on you and other punishments.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not allowed to vote anymore, I believe.
No. But they just took that one right away.
This charge was appealed, though, and you were relabeled as a follower instead, which is a category that had a much less severe punishment. Do you remember if there was any specific evidence that you presented to help your case? Something that you showed them that was like, look, I wasn't actually passionate about the Nazi Party, but instead I was just following orders.
Straight up, Jared, is pretty much everything I've said here. Once they added they broke the symmetry. Germans are a very specific people. We like our chocolate a certain way. We like our clothing a certain way.
Okay.
You know, we like our people a certain way. And we when I showed off how they broke off from my designs, obviously I got swept up into this whole thing. You know,
Was there a piece of evidence, a smoking gun, if you will, that proved your innocence, like a letter or, I don't know, like a design that you had submitted that you maybe put in your safe and was like, this is gonna what I'm going to use to prove my innocence should this all go south?
There was a very secret design of the original, not the original, like the Mark III, if you will, of lieutenant officer's uniform, black, very 90s shoulder pads, but still like also commanding and kind of worked for that.
Ooh, Janet Jackson.
Oh, see, you get it.
Yes.
And I on that drawing that I put so much care into from little, you know, D-bitch, you can see a note says, maybe some red. And that's what I submitted as like, look at what they're doing. They're ruining my baby. They're taking my baby from me. They're taking my baby as far away from me as possible, putting me in a separate
place from my baby doing horrible things to both of us. I can't even see what is happening. Is my metaphor too stretchy?
No, I'm coming from here. I'm picking up what you're putting down. And so they looked at this piece of evidence and they said,
felt for me.
Obviously, this is a man who was taken out of his comfort zone. He is, and you know, through no fault of his own, he just got swept up in the momentum of what was happening.
It was. And, you know, I'm just so glad that, you know, now my company can be run. And it's almost like everyone's forgotten the whole thing.
Yeah,
like, you know,
everybody's forgotten that Hugo Boss is only around today because they financially benefited from Nazi collaboration.
And which is such a blessing. Thank you all for that, by the way. I appreciate it.
Hashtag blessed indeed. Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for this week's episode of Famous Dead People. I would like to thank my guests, Hugo Boss and Nazi collaborator Hugo Boss and Bob Kane, for joining me in the studio today. I have one final question for you both. It's a little weird, I know, but I'd like to end the show by asking if there's any comedy shows or podcasts or Twitter accounts that you're really big fans of that you want to tell people about. Nazi sympathizer and supporter Hugo Boss. I really don't like that title.
Anything you want to tell people about? Well, now that you've called me a Nazi sympathizer, let me plug comedian Aaron Gold.
Ooh, yeah.
Who is Jewish from, you know, you can just tell from the name right there. Mm-hmm. That's offensive. I think he'd be okay with it.
Okay.
In fact, I'm probably sure his Twitter and Instagram feeds have him being self-deprecating in that sense.
Okay.
Jews!
So you can follow him at Hey, It's Aaron Gold. He also has a delightful podcast called Don't Mind If I Don't, where fans and experts of things he does not like convince him why he is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
One final thing. There is a monthly show here in New York City at the Magnet Theater called You Are Not Alone, an uplifting show about depression. If you are listening to this on the radio, this Thursday at 8:30 at the Magnet Theater on the 7th. It will be there. If you're listening to this on the podcast, March 7th at 8:30. No matter where you are, the 7th at 8:30.
Wonderful. And Bob Kane, anything you want to tell people about?
I want to talk about my best friend, Louis Pearlman. Also a Jew, but he denies it when he's asked if he's Jewish by the Hasidim on the subway.
I do too. Jared Berenstein denies it also.
And I've got a strong inkling that Aaron Gold is like, not me, dude, no.
Okay.
Louis Pearlman has a radio show and a podcast with his friend Kyle Gordon that's called Kick the Jukebox, where he discusses albums and songs that he loves, and you can listen to it on kpiss.fm. Yes, it's a streaming radio station that is called kpiss. You can find it on kpiss at kpiss.fm and look up Kick the Jukebox and you'll find his show. That's what he wants me to plug. Bob Kane, the creator, solo creator of the Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's so interesting. Your favorite comedian and best friend, Louis Pearlman, was on an episode of Aaron Gold's podcast, Don't Mind If I Don't, talking about Riverdale.
It's true. Talking about the teen sensation Riverdale.
All things that I want my listening audience to check out. Also, check out my stuff at JaredBerenstein.com. Buy my book, The Kellyanne Conway Technique. Hit us up at FamousDeadPeople at RadioFreeBrooklyn.org. We're here every Monday at 3 p.m. on Radio Free Brooklyn. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
It's me, Bob Kane. I created the Batman.
Okay.
The Dark Avenger of the Night.
Everybody likes Jarrett. Let me know when it's loud enough or too loud for you guys. Sounds good for you? I'm pretty sure. Did that not work? No, try number two instead.
Yeah.
Maybe number two is better. Louis, you're still good. That's my question for you.
Okay, Beyonce, convince me why I should like Jay-Z.
I know what he did to you.
Yeah, I know what he did. Yeah.
I know about lemonade.
I know.
So I feel like I'm...